Welcome to Dominate for Two, a War Machine and Hordes podcast.
I'm Alex.
I'm Mark.
And I'm Benjamin.
And I'm back.
Don't call it a comeback. You've been here for years.
I never left.
Rocking your peers, putting suckers in fear.
Well, he's been here for 2 days at all ends.
It feels like years.
Yes.
And today we're going to be talking about like community building, tournament organizing, etc. And so this was partially, what's it called? The topic was partially concepted by, I keep on seeing threads on the War Machine subreddit every few months, like, is War Machine dead? My PG quit, and now nobody plays War Machine anymore. Well, I find that frustrating because I live in a vibrant and active community and people are acting like the game is dead when it clearly isn't in a lot of places. There definitely seems to be a problem of some people just don't know how to build and or maintain a community. And so we figured with Tyson here, who is one of the biggest community organizers on the West Coast, we could speak a little bit to how to build and maintain a strong community in good events.
Yes. And so on that note, I guess I'll start. I do tend to ramble somewhat, so you know, you guys can help keep me on track.
Oh, I mean, we're like lasers.
Perfect focus.
Yeah. But yeah, perfect focus. You're one of those fuzzy laser line lasers you turn on, and you know, it's just a faint, distant line of indeterminate edge.
Into smoke at an indefinite distance.
Well, this is
so like I said about rat holing. You know, 5 seconds in. All right, but yeah, so. Talking about so community organizing, keeping vibrant communities, and also a little bit about tournaments themselves. So I guess the first place we can start is, you know, what happens when your local community organizer basically just gets burnt out? That's usually what happens. Gamers all like to, you know, they like to take the easy route. You know, we all love it when someone just mother hens us and, you know, someone's hurting the nerds. It's usually a lot of work. And eventually, yes, it is. It takes a lot of willpower to not like actually just bring a taser sometimes. I would love that.
Put it on a long stick.
Yeah.
Don't even have to get like up from your chair. Just
like a cattle prod.
Yeah, perfect.
Like a 300-volt cattle prod, just enough to give them a little jolt. but yeah, so, you know, invariably, you know, there's very many vibrant communities in War Machine, and then some have atrophied, and it changes per area, you know, so you'll have the people like Mark was saying, you know, my community died, what happened is War Machine dying, and you have other communities saying, what are you talking about? You know, we're bigger than ever, and we have so many people that... It's the same thing where, you know, your local experience does not dictate, you know, what's going on nationally, but your local experiences are important. So having someone to organize events and herd is important. Eventually someone will leave. So what do you do about that? As TOs or organizers or just your local XPG or whoever wants to step up, just having... So consistency is the big problem, and having events that you can run, game nights that you want to organize, leagues, you know, a lot of these things aren't fun for established players that like to play competitively. They've been around time, like running your 100th demo, your 100th battle box, shepherding, you know, because War Machine is one of the more difficult games to start. Like there's a huge learning curve and a ton of gotchas. And a lot of moving parts. It's a very rewarding game, which is why I think we all here enjoy it.
Yeah, definitely. That's why we stick with it.
Yeah. I mean, I've been playing since release back in the day when Crix's second unit was Steelhead Halberdiers. Like, you know, I've been at this a long time. And the vibrancy of the game and the interactions have been what have kept me around. But, you know, I'll go through waves myself where I'm burnt out or I just don't want to run anything. And having helpers is important. So having people that are part of your community, and sometimes it takes you asking like, hey, you know, I need help. If you're the one that usually runs things, and getting people even just to help a little bit is usually takes the load off. Because what will happen is someone will be really into it. They're running things all the time. and then something happens and they get burnt out and they're just like, I'm out. And all of a sudden your community falls apart because no one now is shepherding everyone, and no one wants to step up, not necessarily wants to step up, but they're not comfortable. Like they've never, you know, experienced, I've never run a tournament, I've never done any of this. And it can be intimidating for, especially generally gamers can be kind of shy. I do appreciate with most miniature games and War Machine that it's a very inclusive environment typically. You know, way back when I would go to a con alone and I was just a regular player, and you could generally just sit down, and as long as you're willing to say, hi, what's up? You know, I play, what do you guys play? You know, I don't know anyone here. Like, they're usually not going to shoo you off. Like, they'll say, hey, sit down, come bullshit, and, you know, hang out and do stuff like that. So back to on track.
having assistance.
Yes. So having assistance is very important for helping. And it just, so starting at a local level. So you're going to have that one person that usually runs everything. Having someone you can depend on. So eventually, you know, so you can, if you're still effectively running the event, getting it started, but then someone else is judging or just helping maintain doing the pairings, and then you can play. And being proactive about actually getting those people to help if they're willing to. Like, hey, are you willing to help? Would you like to help? You know, would you like to help this community for 4 hours?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'll play a few games and then drop or whatever, or I'll play the buy. You know, so you still get to participate in games, because that's a problem I run into. Like, I don't play very much. You know, I'll play every so often on a local game night, but then every event you go to, you know, you're running something. And so unless you're lucky enough, like this weekend, I got to play one buy, which is, hey, I got a game in. I got half a game in, because I was away from the table for half the game. But that's still, you know, I still got the miniatures out. I was able to provide someone a good experience. At least they got to play instead of sit on their thumb for, you know, 2 hours. And so having people to help in even small increments, mm-hmm. and cajoling them to start participating and realizing, you know, it's not that hard. Like, I have all the terrain, I have all the scenarios, I'll bring everything, I'll bring the laptop, I'll show you how to do everything. Like, you don't have to figure it out, but you don't have to worry about failure, which I could see as being a large part of it, because even a small 16-man tournament could be intimidating to a first person. Like, what happens? Like, what happens when PG Swiss crashes and I lose everything? Or how do I manually pair everything? Or, you know, all these problems that are crop up that are relatively simple to solve once you've solved them a few times before, and tell them, oh, watch out for this. You know, you're going to run into these problems. You know, you want to walk around and start everyone's clocks. If, you know, you give them hard time limits, you're not going to run late. So all these little things of knowledge you can impart to people, so they'll either take it with them, or they'll be comfortable enough that, you know, if you have to disappear for an emergency, they can still run events.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the largest things, I think, on a local level, is consistency. People know that events will happen. And as soon as an event that's planned doesn't happen once or twice, they'll stop. They'll move on to something else.
Mm-hmm.
Gamers are kind of whimsical. You'll have your hardcore gamers or your hardcore War Machiners that'll stick it out through anything. But typically half of a meta is pretty casual.
Mm-hmm.
And interacting that, and this is where having someone to help with social media, interacting with, like, someone, a local person isn't going to be your local main person, isn't going to want to spend, you know, 5 hours a week doing social media, contacting people, saying, you know, texting people, hey, you're going to come to game night, I'll make sure you have a game, or scheduling games, you know, because nothing's worse than driving 45 minutes or an hour to your game store and then there's no games to play, or you haven't scheduled. So getting people proactively scheduling, like, you want to, you know, if you're going to come, like, schedule a game, get on the forums, get on the Facebook, you know, for our local area. Mm-hmm. And, you know, make sure you have a game or Discord chat or whatever you're using to coordinate. So having some of that basic stuff, you know, coordination is a big deal. And then the next step is also integrating with your game store. Some game stores can be very difficult to deal with. Some game stores are very good to deal with. And having an open line of communication with them and working with, you know, tournament support and trying to talk to them about, like, hey, you know, the tournament's $10 or $15. Can they do, like, a product buy-in? Instead, you know, so they pay you $30, like you move more product. Can we do prize pool boosting? So you can move more stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you're due, you know, so we give out gift cards for, you know, $30, $50, $100 even, depending how large it is. And like, they always spend a little more. Like, they're not going to spend like $100 on the dot. Like, yeah. Oh, I got this free $100. I'm going to get something that's worth $150.
Yeah.
And you're turning product off your shelves and explaining it to them in the positive sense of like, prize pools bring gamers out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's really part of it. The prize kits we do have currently, unfortunately, are kind of...
If only they went back to feet coins, it would be...
Well, so but even better. Then, but it, okay, so, you know, once you have your third, fourth feet coin or first place coin, and even at a certain point, depending on the gamer, like, what am I going to do with prize, you know, with miniatures prize support?
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas gift cards to gaming stores are kind of cool because you can go get anything. Oh, I want paints. You know, I want to go get board games. I want to get, you know, comic books.
Mm-hmm.
You know, turning, having some kind of prizes that are generic that they can turn into other things potentially. But there are the people that are like, oh, I got a colossal or I can go buy mm-hmm. my new miniature. And there's people I have like five armies and as soon as it comes out, like it's pre-ordered and I have it. And,
yeah. Actually, now that you mentioned it, I do want to plug the Game Castle special thing. So if you're in the NorCal area and haven't already heard of this deal, they have a deal going on where if you play at 10 on their calendar scheduled events, which are regular game nights, leagues, etc., and you check it off with the staff member every time at any of their locations, you get a free colossal at the end.
Yeah. No wow. catches. It's really legit. No special membership. No.
Do you know if they said whether it's your choice or whether it's random?
I don't.
Enjoy this Denny 3.
Yeah. I think you probably get a choose, but don't quote me on that. And I think there is a time. I think it's a summer event.
Yeah, so I think it's like 3 months starting from events. August, so like it would probably end in like November or something.
But if you have like three or four options a week to score a point, and you can score multiple points in a week, it's,
yeah,
you know, it's realistically you could farm one out in, you know, 3 weeks if you really wanted to.
Yeah.
Or just casually, like one or two events a week. Not even events, game nights.
Yeah. Well, and that's like... The retailer support and just having a store on board, you know, because not everyone has all the materials required to play a game, including a sufficient space to accommodate people who want to get a variety of games. So, like, you kind of have to organize around a natural hub, and that for most people, that's the game store. You know, tournament, like, strong tournament pricing is actually an incentive, even if your metagame is largely casual, like... You know, I had a period where my tournament win rate with Kador was like over 90%, and the NorCal meta effectively funded the purchase of my Signar army, and like
to
that
get
was
you out of Kador.
Yeah, that was actually a big draw for me. Mm-hmm.
And then on that, having a sufficient amount of prizing that's either random, so people. There's always, you know, people operate on hope.
Yeah.
And if I'm a casual player or Benji here that's going to go 0-4.
oh, yeah.
that having prizes that they can win that are random, that don't go, you know, that don't stack up into first through third is actually important. And having widgets or little terrain things you made or little custom laser cut things or... You know, something that they find of value is important. And then also, I usually passively aggressive promote painting. I don't require it, but like at LVO, all the raffles you get entered in either by playing with a fully painted army. I'm kind of leaning on it. You know, if you're missing a piece or two here, like, you know, you're showing commitment, whatever, that's fine. Here's your raffle ticket. Otherwise, if you play with unpainted armies, like, yeah, you get prizes if you get first through third, and otherwise, like, sorry, you know, you have another swarm of little gray men, and so because it's generally the way War Machine has been billed as a more competitive game and
a gamer's game,
a gamer's game where hobbying hasn't been required from the start, whereas from 40K, it's always been required for the start. And that's your buy-in. And if you want to play competitively, you either do this or you don't. Where we don't have that kind of expectation. So having soft prizes Like we had, you know, two $50 raffles that you got entered in this weekend.
Three, I believe.
Well, for the painting.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we had three raffles that could go to anyone. And then two raffle prizes that went to people that painted their armies that they were only entered in. So
in the mystery box.
Yes. Well, the mystery box, I think I did as a generic prize also. Yeah. But anyways, but having prizes you're giving specifically to people who painted, you can do a separate one if you want to do like best painted army or best painted single figure, but I wouldn't make that the only painting prize. Like you want to incentivize people to paint no matter how well or bad it is. Like mm-hmm. if they rattle can their Kador red, paint all the silver and then army paint, dip it and maybe throw a little sand on, like that's painted, you know, that mm-hmm. it's better than gray. It's going to still look great on the table. It helps with immersion and they shouldn't be penalized. Like you want to promote people just to paint, like mm-hmm. even at the minimum, like those are the people that would play with little gray men for the rest of their lives. But if there's prizes on the line, then maybe like, oh, I can spend a few hours and like then I qualify as painted. Oh, okay, maybe I'll do that, even if mm-hmm. I hate it. So finding ways you can promote people to give you the behavior you want without feeling like they're getting smacked on the back of their head over it.
Yeah, especially because in War Machine, because of how fast things change, like, oh, I want to try this new build. It requires me to buy all this new stuff. 40K is a lot more glacial. Like you play a faction, you're going to play it for decades. And there's not going to be a ton of new units that come out for it except like once in a long time.
True. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Well, so, the meta changes.
You aren't
and
constantly
you...
getting like new models and having to paint them. Like War Machine is.
Well, currently War Machine's model release cycle is nutballs because you're like, I mean, I just think about all the Signar stuff that I've been playing with. And I used to be fully painted in Signar when I went to a tournament. And like yesterday I was looking and I'm like, wow, I'm like a third painted. Yeah. And I was like,
well, but it's
happen?
The new wave
right,
system
it's the new
that
wave
they're
of system.
Yeah,
it
instead
was
of getting
just
one model here
and
there.
So many models hitting the table. And I was like, oh, right. Like every trencher thing's all brand new. Like all of these new solos, like all of these new jacks.
Yeah, I think like outside of the Creel Stone, I'm literally not using any of the models I used last year in, like as a troll player.
Yeah, I just switched factions and I was nowhere near fully painted.
And I mean, the game's like you can keep playing some of the older stuff and it's not bad. Like you can stick with your models, but I think players are encouraged to try new builds with new themes, with new things. That means that they're changing around what models they're playing with faster. And if you tried to force painting, there would be a lot more pain than a 40K community.
Yes, and I actually, many a year ago at Barry Opens, I was starting with enforcing painting, and I was losing.
Oh, yes, I remember that. That was my nightmare. Yeah. I got myself painted, but wow, was I pushing.
And I was losing, you know, I was literally losing 10 to 20 people over it, mm-hmm. and I didn't deem that worth. Like, I'd rather have community involvement and find proactive ways to encourage painting mm-hmm. versus, you know, the stick that says, no, bad, you didn't paint. You don't get a play. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so slightly back more to track. So that was prizing and somewhat of, you know, local community involvement. Yeah.
I'm hearing like a couple of topics in here. Like one is getting new players in. Two is fostering behavior and an end game, if you will, to the hobby that keeps people persistently engaged and, like, you know, going to tournaments, even if you're relatively casual, like driving your enjoyment of the hobby through, you know, a carrot type behavior and, you know, all that. And then there's like actual organization and assistance that like prevents TO burnout. And then I think, you know, ultimately, like, we've only touched on this, but, like, national or regional organization.
Yes. So I think there's one other thing at the local level. So talking with, like, new players in tournaments. So there's a lot of people that are casual, and typically to get them to show up to events, like, you usually have to have a conversation because they hear a tournament. They go, oh, it's competitive. I don't want to play competitive. Mm-hmm. But talking... So it'll take a you know, a frank conversation with them. And some people just don't want to, hands down. Like, but there's, you know, what we colloquially call, you know, the funsies bracket. Like you lose mm-hmm. your first game and then now you're generally in the funsies bracket. You're going to tell them that, yes, we are on a time clock, but you're going to get 4 to 5 games in this weekend, or 3 to 5, depending on how many people there are. there's going to be scheduled. You're not going to have to find people to play. Your first game might be a little rough, but what do you want to get out of this? Do you want to learn more of the game? Or if you're just really, really casual and you just want to push models across the table and you want to play a four-hour game, okay, they probably won't show up. But if they want to get a little better, see more stuff, have an environment and describe it, you know, it's an environment where we will provide the games for you. The games will be clean. Like there's a TO to help you. There's a TO to help answer questions. There's a TO to get you your opponent. So you're not going to have the problems that you can run into on casual nights. If you run into someone that is being a little difficult, you have someone you can go judge, raise your hand, ask a question, or have a conversation with the judge about like, hey, you know, they're super sloppy. Can you have a talk with them? Or I'm seeing issues. Can you just hang out? And then, you know, so there's ways you can provide support to these casual players and tell them the benefits of just even appearing at a, you know, a tournament. You'll get better. You get more games in. Like, do you want more games? And sometimes the answer is no, and they just don't, you know, they just won't have it. But a lot of times you can talk them into it and explain that, you know, the tournaments quickly striate into the really competitive people and then the people that are there for fun. Like, I'll have a ton of people at LVO. You know, half the bracket typically is there for fun. Like, they just want games. They want good games. They want structured games. And they don't really care as much as they if they win or lose those first few.
Yeah.
And I did have one more point, but it'll come back to me in a second.
Well, the ease of organization is a really important pitch and something like I have not tried yet. But like when I'm, you know, when new players are entering our metagame, like that's, you know, as soon as they are fluent in the rules, they're sure they like the game. They can field like at least one fully sized army, you know, I'm like immediately like, you should come to tournaments. Like this is what will keep you engaged and have the game fresh. You will get a lot of games. And if you're interested in developing as a player, this is the place to do it.
Yes.
And there is sometimes resistance, but like, and you know, people do have that resistance, like, oh, it's going to be competitive. But
you're playing War Machine.
Right, yeah. Yeah, you're playing War Machine. And it's
like we have this game called 40K for you. I hear they have really pretty models.
Something that I feel like people don't do enough is Steamroller Leagues is a bridge into Steamrollers. Where the idea is you play a round of a Steamroller each week. You put people in contact with each other. You're like, you have the week. Like, play on the scheduled game night or find a time that works better for the both of you and play your game. And like we do it like it's a Steamroller, but you don't have to play on clock. You don't have to worry about like allocating an entire day to it. And I think it's a nice little bridge. And I used to be doing a lot of them, but I kind of
And that's where you get, you know, with like burnout.
Yeah.
At a certain point, you know, either through life or you're just, you know, or something happens or you're just like, I've had it. I still want to play. I want to take a step back. And, you know, that's where we're talking. So bridging that into help, you know, having multiple people in a community. And it still takes the main person getting those people on board and building. You still need a point of someone that's building the community. And with the evaporation of the press gang and a central location for people to coordinate and ask questions, there's a few disparate places kind of spread around the Reb, but there's really no main nexus anymore that exists for people who want to organize. And a support structure, you know, now instead where we had the press gang and the point systems, which gave you a small monetary incentive to run things, which would either fund, like, you know, it funded my armies for years and years, and or prize support. You know, at a certain point, you just have too many toys. And so, but then it turns into prize support, and you're doing it because you love the community, and it helps inject, like, newer players will come on, like, hey, I have, you know, I have 1,000 points. How about I spend 200 and I get you, like, here's a battle box, and here's a starter. And if you decide you don't like this game, please give them back to me. But they're yours, you know. And that fosters a lot of gratitude from new players and makes them feel loved and accepted and all that cool stuff that, you know, sometimes socially awkward gamers crave, which is what can drive, you know, a real community, you know, having a good community and, you know, acceptance and all that other fun stuff. But so back to help, having a few people that can help out, like we were talking about, and spreading the load, And the more you can spread the load between people, the easier it is to pick up when someone drops out mm-hmm. and refill that role and or help with burnout.
Yeah.
But it's hard. Like, it still takes someone willing to wrangle, mm-hmm. you know, the people that need, you know, that you need to do that.
Yeah. You still need someone who's like the master of ceremonies, at least.
Yeah. Or that's willing to organize it and having a point of organization. So mm-hmm. either a local Facebook group or a local Discord chat, a flyer that's put up in your store by the merchandise that lists, you know, like, hey, we have game nights this night. Here's our Facebook group that you can reach coordination through. There's a lot of little simple things that helps you pick up the casual people. So mm-hmm. like, we have that in our store, you know, that's just posted by the War Machine product. And, you know, the same thing with the 40K, and we just have a general miniatures night. And then it lists the leagues that are going on. And since we're in a college town, we have a high turnover problem.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know if it's a problem, but you get a lot of new people that come in. They're there for a year or two and then they leave. So you have a lot of churn. So we have, you know, established people that stick around. That do a lot of, you know, community fostering and stuff like that. But, you know, I see a lot of the problem of the churn. So some nights you'll have, you know, or one year you'll have 15 or 20 people and then everyone graduates and you're down to five, you know, right. so it becomes readily apparent that you, and so you're constantly bringing in a new crop and having someone to teach. Like, if there's literally no one that's willing to sit down and shepherd, you know, a new player through their first five games or so and helping them build lists and teaching them what War Machine's about and letting them know just ahead of time, like, it's a really tough game. There's a lot of moving parts. It's really rewarding, but, you know, it's not simple.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and as long as they know that, so that helps set their expectation. Like, setting expectations is a big thing, and not hating on other games is actually quite important, in my opinion, because I would rather have a miniature gamer in any game in my store than chasing off someone that doesn't want to play War Machine. And, you know, having your person, like, a new face walks in, you're like, hey, what's up? You know, you just checking stuff out. Do you play something?
Mm-hmm.
And pointing them in the right direction, like, what kind of games do you like? You know, do you want to play War Machine? You know, do you want to play, you like the look of steampunk and, you know, playing with armies and stuff like that? Do you want a more casual game that has really big stompy stuff and pretty models, you know, a la 40K? Or do you want small skirmish stuff, you know, Malifaux and Infinity? And kind of point them in the right direction and give a positive spin to all the different types of games. Like, give them the positive aspects. Because I'll hear incessantly when you go, and it's all games do this. You know, you'll hear the one poison apple that's saying, you know, this one game is awful and sucks, and here's all the bad things for it, and my game is perfect. Well, you know, no games are perfect, and there's good aspects.
Oh, my game is perfect.
My game is perfect.
I don't know, Mr. 3-in-1.
Ow.
Beaten out by mercs, no less.
Yeah.
You know, mercs are bad. Don't you remember Mark II?
So bad. But even a Shay on the table.
Yes. No cannon to the face. But having, you know, positive community involvement,
mm-hmm.
Because there's nothing worse, no matter what the game is, if you new and walk into the store and you talk to someone and they trash these three other games and tell you how wonderful theirs is, if, you know, usually your BS meter kind of goes off and you're like, I don't, you know, like, oh, you seem like kind of a crappy person. Like, maybe I'll go somewhere else. You know, instead of
communicating in a way that people will naturally resist.
Yeah. You give them the big loving arms, you know, and you try to get them to, you know, open up into into any game. And eventually they'll find a game they like. And they will tend to gravitate to the more popularly played games in the store anyways. So if War Machine is one of them, or you're running leagues and tournaments and you're like, hey, we're playing this league, like, I have an extra army, why don't you come learn? Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. and, you know, kind of setting that hook. And, you know, a certain percentage of the people are gonna like, this isn't the game for me. And you're like, that's fine. Thank you for playing. Here's another game you might like, you know, and we still play on the same night and come hang out and make friends. And
bigger and better stores, better for everyone.
Exactly.
Yeah, and the larger the general community is, the more likely it is you're going to find other players that really like what you like.
Yes, exactly. So that's kind of the local level. And, you know, the big thing is also, you know, integrating with your store and community management and having your local, you know, between all the different stores, just getting to know the people that run events at those stores and trying to coordinate. It's a lot of work. Like, there's no easy way around it. You know, there's, it's, you know, a labor of love. And it, try not to set up fiefdoms. Mm-hmm. If, you know, that's the nice way to set it, to say it, like, just be willing to share. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not, you know, everyone in an area will do better if the game itself is better. You know, if there's more people playing, as soon as you try to squeeze, you know, if you try to latch onto something too tight, it's just going to slip through your fingers.
Yeah.
Bay
Area, the Bay Area has been an enormous beneficiary of the fact that, you know, the Bay Area, for people who don't know, is basically a bunch of like freestanding municipalities all jammed together right on top of each other. And for years we had like 5 or 6 different metagames around here that weren't aware of each other's existence. And it actually took travel and like doing some research to find one another's tournaments. And, you know, it's a credit to our organizers and our players that it never really got subdivided into this is my territory, this is my territory, whatever. Like, you know, we've formed this big melting pot that encompasses the entire region, and it really benifits everybody.
Except for SAC. SAC's on an island by itself.
Well, it's just far enough because of the way the freeways are and the traffic levels nowadays.
And, like, there's, like, multiple tolls depending on how you're coming.
Yeah, because we used to go up there more, but, you know, it went from being an hour and 20-minute drive or whatever it was to, like, double that because of the traffic changes. And, you know, that became the big barrier because you'd have to leave at, like, 6 a.m. or earlier to get up there for a tournament.
Yeah, hats off to the SAC crew who came down for the Classic.
Oh, for sure.
No, like, yeah. Yeah, Sacramento's...
That's like a pain for regular steamrollers.
Yeah, oh, yeah, Yamadera and Andrew Abernathy and all them, like, they're troopers for making that trip.
Yeah. Yeah, we also had the advantage here for a while with the Press Gangers in the Bay Area. We were actually coordinating so that we had store events that were going on basically every weekend for a couple of years.
That's how LA used to be when I lived there.
They still do a lot of that where they'll have a rotating schedule. And that's where like Facebook coordination helps. Like there's, you know, the SoCal War Machine page and then there's a NorCal one. And so jumping to another side topic. So generally there's, you know, your area is going to have a local page. Something I think I want to create for at least the West Coast is like, how do we find events now, at least on an entire coast? You know, everyone, all the events are usually posted in the little local groups. There are a certain amount of people that are willing to travel, but having one cohesive place, like a West Coast War Machine events page, and then like an East Coast War Machine events page, or just somewhere where people can join, or at least the TOs of a community can be part of. And then events can be added to the calendar. And then there doesn't need to be a lot of like social interaction on them, but just the notification coming to you of like, hey, there's an event this weekend, or you got invited to an event. Like there's going to be a little bit of event spam probably going on. Mm-hmm. But just somewhere where you can find them and see a cohesive calendar of like a location, like a city and like a steamroller or type of event, I think would have a lot of worth for overall coordination. Because if I wanted to find out like when the Central Valley has something, when NorCal has something, when the Bay Area has something, I start having diving through like 3 or 4 or 5 pages. Mm-hmm. And I also have to know how to find them.
Right. So, which is not always obvious.
Yes.
Yeah. And well, there was a classic example with the I-5. Like when we originally went to the first I-5 we attended, I didn't know the thing existed. I had no idea or inkling. And I think it was Alex who had discovered or talking to somebody.
They really don't have Facebook presence, do they?
Not that I know of.
And but even if they have a Facebook presence, like they have their own presence. And unless you know about them, or they'll have their own webpage or... Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those things where, you know, I was frustrated initially because it was such a great event. And yet there was... Like, there was no promotion for it, even though they had good attendance. It was from people who knew people. It wasn't from getting any outside thing. And I know that, you know, with cross-trending a lot of the people, we've now gotten a lot better visibility, at least with the West Coast competitive players. You know, like, I know some of the SoCal guys, you know, we're all friends on Facebook, so they can see us talking about something, and I can see their posts now, and they're like, oh, hey, by the way, there's this thing coming up. And I'm like,
but it's requiring cross-pollinization.
Right, and also, you know, the people have to be active enough to make sure that they invite everyone in the sort of War Machine subgroup that they may have to let me know that the event's happening.
Well, and that's what I'll have to do. Like if I have, you know, like the San Luis Polycon event, it's like, okay, then I'll share it to like the 5 meta pages around and invite everyone from that. And which isn't necessarily bad, but it also from someone new coming into a community, like how do they find all these pages? Do they know about them? Can we just have one place? There's a lot of problems, and there's no easy solution. It's just a matter of create, and not everyone's on Facebook, but typically there's enough people on, and it just requires one or two people in a community that's willing to drag people along. Like I had that problem with SoCal Open last year where, you know, one person decided, even though they paid and they were signed up and everything like that, they're like, oh, I really don't feel like going. And
they're local too.
Yeah.
So they were like a 20-minute drive and they're just like, eh.
And then like two friends are coming with them, but now that they're not driving them, like, oh, I'm not going to come. So having not that, you know, throw anyone specifically under a bus, but
Mark,
hey, I showed up, I won, and then I disgraced the event by doing terribly at LVO.
Yeah, I know. You skate all the way through to finals day and then you lose right away.
At least I lost to the first and second place people there. True. Those were the two games I lost.
but having someone that's willing to, you know, because California and the West Coast is just really long and everything's spread out. And there's most of the events you're driving, you know, hours to or an hour. Like you're really lucky if a store is within half an hour of you. Like you're blessed. So having someone that's willing to drive and cajole the people, because people will go, like it takes a little bit of ribbing, you know, it's like, hey, you know, there's this stream lore coming up, I want to go, like, how about you guys go, you know, like, hey, you want to come with, like, I think you have free time, I know you want to go, and why don't you come with, like, I'll pick you up, you'd be ready at this time, like, you have to do a little mother henning. And I think any gaming communities like that, it was the same way with 40K, if you can get one person that's willing to drag a lot of people with, like, all of a sudden, maybe you end up with two cars, or it's easy to generate excitement versus if a person feels like they're all alone and like, oh, I got to drive like 3 hours and, you know, I'm going to be driving by myself and then I'm going to play four rounds and then I got to drive like 2 or 3 hours home. Like, ooh, like that's, you know, quickly a no-go. So having, you know, back to the, you know, the local, having someone where, you know, that will help organize. Is important and not always possible, but that's the reality of keeping a vibrant meta or even a medium meta, keeping people interested, because it's really easy to get home from work and sit down and, you know, pop on a video game and get on, you know, put the headphones on and talk to your friends and like you don't have to go anywhere. Like War Machine's a lot. Miniature gaming itself is a lot of work.
Yeah. And that's the reality is like, your biggest competitor is not 40K or Magic the Gathering or whatever for building your community. It's video games.
Yeah. Or and just general apathy.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's a lot. And once you're there, like I'll have nights where I'm really tired and I just want to stay home. But, you know, like there's a new player that's showing up or there's, you know, someone you scheduled a game with. So it's kind of like going to the gym where there's the accountability. Like as soon as you schedule a game, it's like, oh, I'm going to be there because Jim's going to be there. And Jim's like, oh, I got to be there because Tyson's going to be there. And, you know, unless something real life comes up like, hey, I'm stuck at work, I can't leave. Like, usually people will show up. And, you know, half the nights, like if I'm tired or there's no game, like I'll pair people up and I'll say, all right, you play you, you know, you play you. And I'll sit and play Watch Machine for like 3 hours because I'll just decompress. You know, it's cool to be out with friends and you can just sit there and decompress, you know, from work or whatever. Stuff that's going on. And so then moving up to more of a national setting.
Yeah, escalating to like national or regional and like upping your game and your community involvement.
Yes. So specifically with the, you know, again, back to the dissolution of the press gang, for larger events, finding people has been very difficult. And it's and we've had to change the way we do it. There's still the people that have always been active that will help regardless. And those people are the people currently that are keeping everything going. Without the, you know, I was talking about without the points and the small, not that going to conventions, spending your money to get there, staying in a hotel, working for 3 days, you know, straight, and then maybe, you know, getting $200 or $300 in product, like I might as well, like you're never doing it for that, but it helps soften the blow. Like, oh, I'll come away with like a new list or something like that. And it doesn't, it helps you not feel like you've been taken advantage of. So now what we've done with LVO is, so now it's on the conventions, you know, to really wrangle all the people and provide some kind of incentives. Though we usually run on a shoestring budget. Like, we're, you know, conventions typically, at least miniature conventions, like, we're not there to make money. We're there for the community. So it's not like we can pay everyone, which is unfortunate. Like, we'd love to just like, hey, you know, come work for us. You know, you'll get your 10, 15 bucks an hour and we'd have plenty of help. But finding some kind of other support structure where I'm fortunate through the attendance of LVO that we have enough budget to work with to help people out, where we can give, you know, there's the freebies that you can give, like, hey, if you work one day, you get a full, you know, you get the rest of the weekend wristband and event passes, and you can do whatever you want for the other 2 days. You know, help one day, you get in, you know, you get your $100 entrance to whatever you want to do. So you feel like you're getting a little something back. If you work all weekend, like, we'll have a hotel room for you. So that directly costs us money. It's still cheaper than paying people, but there's nothing like, all right, I'm going to fly there and then I'm going to pay $300 for a hotel and I'm going to work all weekend. Like, really, realistically, who wants to do that? Like, that's, you know, it's, I wouldn't expect anyone to do that. So finding some kind of support structure for your event, that works with your budget or some kind of incentive, like free tickets, where it doesn't cost you anything. Granted, you're not getting their ticket income, but you wouldn't have it anyways if they were helping. So, or they wouldn't be there, or people that are locals, like, hey, I don't have any money. Like, the people who, the newer gamers who are cash strapped, are a great audience for this. Like, hey, why don't you help? Like, you know, like, maybe you can crash with me in my room or something like that. So it doesn't cost that anything. It doesn't cost the con anything like that. Or you can pay like $20, you know, hey, pay me $50 for the whole weekend and whatever, you can sleep on my floor. And then you get a free ticket. You're like, so I got to pay for some food and, you know, $50 and I can travel with you to the convention. So finding these compromises to get people to help, is what kind of has to start happening. At least in my opinion, and
more players should volunteer when free.
Yeah. Well, and then the next thing is, small segment volunteering. So there's, like I was saying, there's a limited amount of people that are running a majority of the events. You know, East Coast, that, you know, they put in hours and hours and hours of time, you know, and some people hundreds of hours a year, you know, running these events, setting up for these events, doing the organizing for these events. And they do it for free, you know, because of their love for the community and the people they've grown to know, and, you know, not, you know, there's no money in it for them. So, you know, so they're doing it out of love. But at a certain point, people get burnt out and you want to help prevent that. So as players, I think it's important to be able to willing to help a little bit. And a lot of the events will have sign up sheets. And that's part of events having us better advertise where you can get that, you know, and advertise the community integration, like, hey, if you want to help, you know, here's who you contact. And when I'm saying help is like 2 hours, like 4 hours, or if you have a break, like, you know, if I have someone taking a shift in Iron Arena for 4 hours, like, I'll give you something like, hey, you know, you get a free wristband, you know, like, all, you don't have to do it for free. It would be nice that if people were willing to volunteer just for the sake of volunteering.
Yeah.
I have the luxury of being able to give you something for that, but not everyone does. But just the few hours of help here and there, you know, it's like I have a tournament and then I'm done, and, you know, then I have the whole night off and I'm going to go play around, because granted, you are spending money to be there and you want to enjoy your experience, but the experience won't exist unless people are willing to help some, even just a few hours. I'll be like, hey, you know, we're going to be starting this event. Like, and that's, there's a large admin overhead for events at the very beginning. Getting people organized, getting list checks, getting list entered, making sure tables are set up, redoing terrain. Like, you can easily keep 5 people busy for a 64 man event for like half an hour. And then after that, like, you need 1 or 2 people. But having people that are there, or just the happenstance, hey, you know, hey, Travis, are you starting an event soon? Do you need, you know, do you need an hour or two of help? Like, I'm happy to, and just having people that can check in, like, he may be too busy to actually organize you, but he'll have hopefully someone else, like, go talk to that person. Like, he'll point at someone, they will tell you what to do. and point and being able to have like these little bursts of help.
Yeah.
Help a lot, because typically the people running events, like I'll go 16 or 18 hours a day at LVO for 3 days straight. And then the day the setup, and, you know, so like there's, it's a lot of work and it's easy to get burnt out if you're not careful. And then on top of the hundreds of hours of organization, setting up events, setting up helpers, and doing all the associated tasks that go with that.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to delegate becomes really important, to have people you can trust. And even new, if you've never done anything like that before, you know, still feel free to volunteer, because they can find tasks. I have helpers that, you know, very casually play War Machine and have no admin or running things experience. But I'm like, I can teach you how to set up zones, and I can teach you how to pick up sheets. And I can, you know, maybe teach you how to do like shuffle pairings for scrambles.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's things that are easy to learn that you don't have to have, that aren't high, like they're tasks that need to be done, but don't have a high TO priority as far as, I guess I could say capability, for lack of a better word. Like right. you don't need a year of training, or you don't need to have passed the judge test, or you don't need this. Like you don't need these requirements. Like I just need a warm body that's relatively intelligent.
Mm-hmm. And that's like, so there's a couple of things in there. Like it is a big effort. It takes a team. A lot of your work is front loaded in coordination,
mm-hmm.
and there's highs and lows as far as what's needed at the event. Something, you know, like when I go to Kingdom Con or whatever, like every time I step out of the room, like I know I'm leaving the hall for a bit, like I'll check in with whoever's on the judges table. Like, are you okay? Do you need anything? Would you like me to bring you back a coffee?
Yeah. Or like food. Like, hey, yeah. You've been standing there for 12 hours. Has anyone gotten you food yet?
Yeah.
Like yeah. That helps a lot, because typically your head judges are not leaving that hall. Occasionally they will be food runs that get them food.
Mm-hmm.
But just asking like, hey, you know, you want a sandwich, you know, you want like, and typically like we'll hand you money. Like, hey, do you want money? You know, mm-hmm. Sometimes they say no, sometimes they say yes. But I have food coming to me. Like
yeah.
that's all I know.
That's the priority.
Yeah. Like in a half an hour, I know I'm going to have food.
Those burgers we got at Kingdom Con this year were disgusting. Are you in on that? I think no. We tried to get some stuff for you. I vaguely remember like showing you the menu and you're like, eh. And then I got something and it was disgusting.
Oh. back to the burgers.
Yeah.
It was like this weird barbecue place, nasty, nasty caramelized onions. I just ate the bacon and gave up.
So good. Every time I hear this story, it makes me happy.
So bad. Like it still makes me angry. It's been like 6 months.
One thing to shout out to people. Remember that when you're at a convention, even as a player, you can be a huge help, because there's a bunch of things that you can do where if you're at the table and your game's wrapped up, first of all, get your reporting in as fast as possible. I know there's always going to be some person who's a little sulky, and there's going to be some person who's just happy they won, but you guys need to go up, turn in your results as fast as possible, make sure it gets done, then go back and pack your shit up. And get it ready to be moved off the table, because there's nothing more frustrating than if you're in a big tournament and there's stuff scattered everywhere and you got to readjust the scenario. Oh,
and ask. So typically TOs will ask you to set up a new scenario, and preemptively, sometimes I'll forget to tell you like, hey, the new scenario, or my helper's busy, and you know, just preemptively ask, hey, what's the new scenario? I'll set it up like mm-hmm. that. Is a world of help.
Yeah. And right, it's one of those things, and when you are ready to leave the table, just take responsibility for the state of the table when you leave it. I mean, it's not that hard to leave a clean setup table for your next opponent. And if everyone's doing that, the entire event runs faster and smoother and it's less of a hassle.
Well, and that means I don't have to do it, because right. Eventually it's the TO or the helper that has to come fix the table.
Right. And, you know, that's a big help. It also helps, you know, just to make sure that you're aware of what the timing is on things. Like be aware of how much time is left. Be aware of, you know, if things are going to be moved or what the tables are going to be like, just so it's one less friction point, because that takes away from the running of the event, which then makes everything run slower.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And being aware, I mean, especially with 2017 and 2018 now, like there's a lot of games that go to time. And if you're one of the last few tables, you know, like I'll come over, I'll grab your sheets, I'll enter them, I'll hand them back to you. And if you guys are still talking, I'm going to yell at you. Mm-hmm. And then I'm starting the new round and you aren't even packed up yet because you've been, you know, jackjawing at each other about, you know, talking about your game. Like there's a certain response. And then you're going to have to rush to the new table and I'll be starting the clock. You know, so usually I'll give people 10 minutes to get settled, you know, so pairings are up, you have 10 minutes. And I'll start your clock. And if you're not staying on it or you're dilly-dallying or you're doing your little pregame ritual of sorting all your tokens, get everything lined out, like your clock's going to be running for 3 minutes before you're ready. So being efficient and knowing an expectation of having an expectation of what the tournament's going to expect from you to keep things moving along. Because after five rounds, if you add, you know, 5 or 6 minutes per round of people dallying and you're not starting clocks on them, you know, next thing you know, it's an hour, you've added an hour to the entire tournament, which is really rough.
Yeah,
at least. And that's why a lot of tournaments run way later than expected, is that it doesn't seem like a lot, but each little instance like that just really pushes back, especially if you're trying to get five rounds in. You know, you can end up at midnight easily before, you know, things get settled.
Yeah, because in 2015 and 2016, like we'd pick up time occasionally, like we'd pick up 5 minutes here, 10 minutes here around. But now there's, you know, there's four or five people that go all the way to time. Like, you know, one person has 1 minute left and another person has 30 seconds left. Mm-hmm. And so your round turnover is effectively, you know, if you're really on it, 2 hours and 10 minutes, but it's probably more like 2 hours and 15 minutes. So every four rounds is 9 hours. You know, minimum. And if there's any kind of lunch break or, you know, a holdover for 30 minutes for people to finally bring back lunch after round two, you know, so now you're quickly coming up on, you know, 10 hours, 10 and a half hours.
Yeah. For a 4 round event.
Yeah. Yeah. For only a 4 round event.
Yeah. The standard local steamroller.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We have 16 people or less and it's going to take you 10 hours.
Yeah. And, you know, like, boy, the, you know, just, over the course of this conversation, I'm struck by something. Like, as a competitive player, over the last year, I've started to pay more attention to what my schedule is at a tournament. And the reality is, I do actually have a lot of idle time at, you know, conventions. Like, single tournaments like the Seattle Open, probably not so much. But, like, larger tournaments, it's actually realistically easy for me to turn around and contribute to the event. And, you know, for me, it's not just a remuneration thing. Like, what's really hitting me out of this conversation is to be a TO at a large event or even a local event takes a huge amount of dedication and work and, like, really, really standing for the community in a big way. And, like, me as a player, you know, this is why I offer to get, like, coffee or whatever for judges, is I see that dedication and, like, the best thing I can do as a player is honor the contribution that this person is making to the community. And, like, you know, it's absolutely my joy to contribute. And just keeping that context in mind as someone who is not the big organizer, what can I do to, like, really honor this person's contribution and make the experience enjoyable for them and smoother for everyone involved?
Yeah, and even if the tournament doesn't run perfectly, like, little things can quickly spiral out of control. But realizing that the person running, like putting on this event and sacrificing a day or two for you is like, they're trying their hardest. Mm-hmm. And if things are going badly, you know, ask if they need help or, you know, try to see, you know, if you can notice what's going on or if rounds are taking really long to turn over, you know, help, you know, talk to your friends like, hey, you know, like, how about you clean up your table and how about you get your reports turned in and, you know, be the positive influence you want to see in the event. And, you know, now I'm talking kind of more wishful thing, not wishful thinking, but be the positive, you know, be the positive thing you want to see in your life or in someone else's life.
Yeah. Well, it's a reorientation of perspective because, like, you know, it's not necessarily the way people think about things, but, like, you know, that's how you actually stand in support of your community and in support of the event that you love.
Yes. And then, you know, realize, like, you know, at LVO, we can be really strict and really, you know, will seem like really hard on you and unforgiving in some circumstances. But a large part of that is the workflow for a large event. Like, it may, from the outside, and same thing with, like, War Machine Weekend and other large events, like, they'll have you do things that seem strange. Mm-hmm. Like, why am I doing this? Like, this seems like it's extra busy work for me. And usually what that will be, it's a process that's a fail safe that makes sure things are entered correctly. And it's an error. Like, so some year there's been like an error that I've had, and this is how we fix it. You know, there's a reason I have four trays of stacks that you're not allowed to touch, and things migrate their way through the stacks in order as they get checked, entered, processed, and saved. And having a workflow that allows you to easily solve problems, you know, and if some these problems happen, like, you know, DOU or PG Swiss, you know, randomly crashes, or your computer takes a kaput and you have to restart and like everything's gone, but you're halfway entering things and you don't know which pile's which, or you need to find someone that handed in their sheet. And this happens at larger events. Like, people will literally check in that morning and they will disappear between the half an hour that they checked in because they're either sick or they were up drinking, especially in Vegas, you know, they're up drinking or they're up staying way too late. And they're just gone. So now you need to fix that. Like, the tournament starts and you have a bunch of people missing. Like, how do I fix that? Mm-hmm. And expect, you know, so have an idea of like, all right, if the worst thing happens and these confluence events happen, like, how do I fix it? That's the least impact on the tournament. Like, all right, so I'm going to grab all these people that are at empty tables. I'm going to match you up, start your game right away. And then I can go back in the back end and fix it. You know, I'm going to write down what tables you are and write down your names, and then I can fix it later.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, you know, just holding the whole tournament up. And, you know, hold, so 100 people.
2 hours to fix it during the round.
Yeah, exactly. Because you have a lot of slack time. And then that's where having helpers helps. Because if I'm the only judge or there's two people running an event that's, you know, 100 plus players, like, you don't have time to fix things really typically. So that's where having helpers comes in, and people that can answer simple judge calls, and people that can TIA, you know, admin. Mm-hmm. And so you can dedicate, you know, an administrative judge to sit down and fix this. Mm-hmm. And get it all sorted, and no one's ever going to know, because I've had many an explosion at LVO where something takes a shitter on the back end, or I'm missing a whole bunch of people, or someone's triple double entered, where you can usually quickly solve the problem on the floor and then come back on the back end and fix it. And no one ever knows, you know, it eats like 2 or 3 minutes, or you have to repair, or like PG or not, Best Coast pairings, like triple pairs everyone. And you have to like redo that. Like, we've had that happen, you know, before. So things like that happen, and expect there's going to be problems. You know, give them a little latitude, and because there's, you know, a lot of things that are out of, you know, that are outside the TO's control that can happen. Yeah. And I mean, there's all kinds of other subjects I can probably go on about, but that's, you know, for as far as like community involvement goes, that's the biggest thing that's going to keep a meta vibrant to some degree, is having multiple people that can, you know, running small events and figuring out also what your community wants. Like, every community is different. You know, some are like just super hardcore, and they're really going to be competitive. But the person leading that, you know, you also want to realize that there will be, you don't want to chase out your casual players. Mm-hmm. Like, casual players sometimes turn into competitive players, but just having a fact of a more vibrant scene and more people playing, and realizing like, I shouldn't have Mark play the new person, because Mark's just going to curb stomp him 3 times in a row, and that new person's never going to come back.
Especially with all the spit.
So, you know, having realistic expectations, and, you know, that's, it kind of starts from the bottom.
Yeah. And also, just one thing I want to throw out, because I know Tyson's been doing the large scale events for a while, but I know that when I was running 32 mans at conventions, you need to understand how much personal effort has to go into setting up terrain, building terrain, acquiring clocks, acquiring, you know, zones and objectives and flags. And if you're looking to support or start running like larger scale tournaments, you really need to sit down and get some support to do that, because it's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's like an hour and a half, I would say, per 8 players. For setup and takedown.
Right. And that's not even counting, like, you know, the hundreds. And my terrain wasn't even amazing, but, you know, I spent at least 100 hours making enough terrain for 32 people to play sort of okay on. And, you know, I still had a lot of work to fill in.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and that's one of those things to think about, is that, you know, there's a lot of overhead to have the kit to run a larger tournament. So, you know, if people can pool their time and their resources, you'll be much more successful if you're trying to run the larger events.
Yes. Agreed.
All right. Is there anything else we want to cover before we wrap this?
Shameless plugs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Second round of shameless plugs. Go ahead.
Yes. So coming up in the end of October is SoCal Open, which is a War Machine Weekend Wild Points qualifier. It's at the Del Mar Fairgrounds. It's more of a casual event in the sense that it'll be one tournament over 2 days. If we finish early, there will be a second tournament on the next day. And probably or even a second casual event on the second day. But then we have a scheduled restaurant reservation where everyone can get together. You can hang out with the new people. You'll have a set up place. So if you're one or two friends that want to come down and you don't know anyone in the area, like you're going to be at a table with everyone around. And, you know, we're all really welcoming and friendly. And I want it more of a casual event where you're not playing five rounds in one day and you're dead. So... there's hotels right next to the fairgrounds. It's actually a very spacious event.
I got last time. Because remember, I got that like really amazing like 3-bed place for like $100 a night. And it was like a luxury suite or something. I need to figure out where that
yes.
was. Because that was insane.
And I will be like staying with you. Away. You figure yeah. it out. You figure out my lodging.
There were like 2 queen-size beds, like a really nice full-out couch, multiple TVs, multiple bathrooms. I don't know how I got it.
Yeah.
It was insane.
But there's SoCal Open. And it's also the winner of that event gets pre-qualified into finals day at Las Vegas Open. So, Mark got that last year, and then he proceeded to tank it, but, yeah. you know, whatever.
Troll style.
NorCal Pride.
Yeah. but that's a nice little surprise, a prize I can give through running both events. And then coming up in February is February 8th, I believe, is Las Vegas Open. War Machine Weekend Qualifier, Iron Gauntlet Qualifier. You get a plane flight to War Machine Weekend, Las Vegas Open, or Lock and Load, whichever your choice is, along with mountains of prizes and gifts. Mm-hmm. And Privateer Press has been there the last few years with all their pre-releases.
Yeah, they had full official support.
Yeah, and there's tons of other games. Even if you're not a War Machine player, there's a ginormous 40K tournament. Forge World's there, Malifaux Infinity, maybe Guild Ball, though they weren't there last year. And I'll probably X-Wing and tons of painting classes. I think there's something like 28 painting classes or hobby classes going on.
Yeah, I mean, the hobby...
Seth does that stuff.
Yes.
He's really big in the painting scene. The guy who runs a lot of the game castles, the stores up here.
Yes.
Yeah, no, the hobby support and just the quality of paint you're going to see there is mind-blowing.
Yeah, I mean, Matt DiPietro will be doing classes there. Seth will be doing classes there. Oh, I know I'm forgetting a ton of people, but there's world-renowned painters and hobbyists that will be there teaching classes. Mm-hmm. It is quite, there's not only, the only, there are many things to do at Las Vegas Open besides just play miniatures.
Yes.
Though there are lots of miniature games to play.
Yeah, like it is a hugely generous schedule filled with interesting things.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then also a shameless plug for me, I'm making little smoke trails that are compatible with the Crucible Guard Rocketmen that are really cool because screw clear flight stands of any variety, even though they are necessary evil for people who do not like hobbying.
Well, they're no longer necessary evil.
No, they
with
are
your
not.
New smoke trails.
Yes, exactly. For a token pittance at figurepainters.com, figurepainters.com, you can find those and resin bases too. And soon to be maybe some busts and painting plinths.
Ooh.
And walls and all kinds of stuff.
If we're not too filled with failure, we'll actually post links to these things as we get them. So that way people can also check our Facebook page and be like, oh, look, I can just go click on this thing and learn.
Ooh, social media.
Whoa. But I'm not sure if we really want to associate ourselves with learning.
Okay. But
or,
you know,
or,
like...
or do I even want to associate my brand with you?
Ooh.
That's a good point.
It depends.
You will get
do you have
hated
any
by
products
K-Dor
that
players.
K-Dor players want to use?
I have rec markers.
Oh, appropriate.
But I think that's it for me and shameless plugs.
All right, cool. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for hosting me too. I had a great time up here.
You know, our palatial digs here. I think 5-star accommodations for
yes.
our guest hosts.
Thank you for listening to Dominate for Two. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Got a question or an episode idea? Email us at dominateforto.podcast@gmail.com.